All right, everybody, welcome to the Nikos Show. Today on the show, we have Roman again and Marian. Roman is an economist. Marian is also a sociologist and AI tech lead. So today we're going to talk about things like with LinkedIn and, you know, controls and bans with things to do with Ukraine.
Thank you for having us.
Yes. Thank you for having us, putting us together. We've been all, we've known each other for a while through social networks, you know, but this is actually us coming together in person and having, you know, a good conversation. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Like in real life, I'm from the calling from the Netherlands. Nikos, I think you're calling from Vienna or something.
I'm in Vienna for the next 2 days, then I'll be in Ukraine.
And Roman, where are you located again? Somewhere in the U.S., right?
I'm in the States, but again, in 2 weeks, I'm going to be in Ukraine as well. So I'm in the States right now.
So we're three guys who know each other over the internet, because social networks, online networks, specifically the LinkedIn network, is a huge boon, I should start out saying, to humanity as a whole. It's thanks to the internet that we know each other. It's thanks to the internet that we can connect with people from all over the world. It's thanks to the internet that we can know what the heck is happening in Ukraine over the last year, so we can actually do something about it. But that same internet also has a dark side, and we would like to talk about it today. Specifically, we would like to talk about bot networks prevalent on social media networks, about what they do specifically on LinkedIn to us, and how we all got banned over the last year or so. Because we're banned buddies, aren't we?
Yeah, I'll add to that. I actually have been banned from literally every single social network. I think Instagram has not banned me yet once, but they have taken down my posts. But I've been banned from, you know, from Facebook. I've been banned from LinkedIn a couple times. So yes, we do have that in common.
So you're trying?
Yes, I'm trying.
But what did you get banned for, Roman?
So I got banned pretty much for my posts in support of Ukraine, or whenever I would expose the atrocities that Russians have been, you know, doing in Ukraine. So it was a really interesting bans as well, because they were not the typical, you know, the hate speech or that kind of stuff. And they were really, you know, felt like they were really, directed. And they would usually come along when a post would go viral, you know, so it'd become, you know, a post that, you know, thousands of people shared, or, you know, millions of views. And then it becomes viral. And then literally every single time I would get after that first ban, I was like, man, you know, I'm actually scared when the post goes viral, because I kind of feel that the attack can happen. And I would expect that the bots and the trolls, they would attack only those who are real threat, right? And the real threat are the posts that become viral and become, you know, and influence a lot of people. So I feel that that exposure, you know, creates, a downside of that, attack. So that's my personal experience.
That's something we should mention here, besides the fact that we're all radical dudes and we all love lame internet jokes. The thing that unites is our very vocal online support for Ukraine. That's how we got to know each other, and that's also how we encountered over the last year these attacks, if I may call them directed attacks, off of being reported, being mass banned, being censored on social media networks. Now, stuff, the mechanism itself is nothing new. Only the context is new, as my old university professor would say. Because we've seen bot networks at work since like 2014, 2016. American elections were pretty well documented. Facebook and Twitter had mass misinformation campaigns from Russian actors. Obama himself confirmed this in speeches. But the whole thing there was that there was not a specific information push, as we would expect from traditional propaganda sources. No, the goal of such actions is always to spread fear and discord, to make people discuss, to get people riled up and get people more extreme. The interesting thing is that this stuff started in 2011 in a way. Okay, I've been in the online data scene since 2007-8 with WikiLeaks, but we forget that this stuff started in 2011 when Putin was reelected, which is when the Russians for the first time started enacting online bot networks domestically for their own Russian audience to spread discord and keep people from rioting en masse over the fact that Putin got reelected, which is a misinformation campaign. Because if you divide people and they argue amongst each other, then they can't raise a fist against you. And this is an old Soviet tactic, really, but it is the basis of modern misinformation campaigns by Russia in the West. And they're more prevalent than we think.
And I just wanted to add to that, that it's not only in the Russia that they have been employing these bot farms, but actually they have outsourced it very well, you know, to countries like India, to Africa, and, you know, and that's why it's to Europe as well, even the United States, you know, that's why it's sometimes so difficult to catch them, because the network is very widespread. There is actually books and research that has been done on this documenting, you know, how widespread these networks are. And they clearly were probably the most prepared in this war, because the United States, you know, I'm sure we use our own, you know, propaganda channels as well. But the point is that United States, because it's a democracy, Netherlands, because it's democracy, Ireland, because it's democracy, you know, whenever we expose these sort of things, and it prevents, you know, from this to becoming widespread. But when you have, dictatorship like in Russia, of course, that stuff is never going to be, you know, exposed to the extent that it could be in the West. And so it's becoming more and more prevalent.
Yeah. And that makes us vulnerable in a way. The twist here, dear listeners, compared to a few years before when these networks were focusing mainly on, leisure time social media. So the Facebooks, the Twitters. I remember the misinformation campaign during MH17. That's how I got involved in the Ukraine thing in 2014. So my country just lost 200 citizens.
Yeah.
Close to, 196 citizens that day. And then the bot, I was on Twitter at that point in time. And then the bots came and started shouting, "Oh yeah, it's misinformation, and the Russians didn't do it. It was actually the Americans." And that's when the whole misinformation thing started rolling, including all the Ukraine is run by Nazi propaganda, which is hilarious, because if you look at sources from before 2014, they just aren't there, which is why Russia to this day always shouts 8 years, because only 8 years ago did the Kremlin start producing that propaganda. But I am derailing here. My point is, now it's on professional networks as well.
Right.
Because we have LinkedIn, and bots are a very serious issue over there as well. Because follower counts for influencers, for marketing campaigns as a whole, for recruiters, it is big business. And bots have become a crucial and a dangerous part of that. Just look at the Twitter deal with Musk, where Twitter said, "We have 5% of bots." And Musk said, "No, you have 20%. Because he was paying for a social media platform's worth and value is determined by the amount of users. And if you are artificially inflating your user numbers by bot accounts, then you are inflating your value. And this is the dangerous part. Because social media platforms are supposed to try to fix bots and get rid of bot accounts, but they make money off of bot accounts. So they have a very direct incentive. You can explain it better than I can. You're the economist here.
Yeah.
Whatever social media platform we're talking about, they don't want to get rid.
Yeah, absolutely. So like with Twitter, especially with the $8, you know, the blue button, you know, that you can actually, you know, you don't, if you have no whatsoever regard for who is the user, you just care about money, then you just need those, you know, that subscription fee for the blue button. And the blue button is supposed to verify something. Obviously, it's not, you know, You can always counterfeit your identity ID and create, you know, multiple fake accounts. I'm sure that there's just no way to trace that. So that is exactly right. The incentives are in favor of bots. The incentives are in favor of bots. And this is very important for people to understand. LinkedIn is a very interesting platform because it is a professional platform. So it really distinguishes itself from, you know, from Facebook, from Instagram, from Twitter, that it is really about the professional connectivity. You know, I made a post probably a month ago that I need faculty for American University Kyiv, and I got 200 resumes. So, which is fantastic. You know, it's a network that really, you know, helps me and, you know, to do my job and to get connected on the professional level. But at the same time, you know, LinkedIn is also, should be much more, I would say, defended or protected from bots because, look, in LinkedIn, there's a lot of layers, right? You write your biography. Yeah, I'm going to get to that. That's a point. But you can really verify if a person is a bot or not. It's a much better verifiable, you know, platform because you can verify, you know, the biography of the person. You know, they have their education, where they work, all of the connections that they have, you know, and things like, you know, your photos, everything is right there. And then people who know you from the professional network, they're going to start saying, oh, this guy has this skill, this skill, this skill. They're going to actually rank you and they're going to give you the stories of their professional experience with you. So you're literally building sort of, you know, your legitimate profile. But so you should be at the level of LinkedIn, be able to verify if the account is a bot or not, if it's a troll or not, much more easily than Twitter or Facebook or some other accounts. So you would expect that LinkedIn is not as susceptible to these bots. But unfortunately, as we have seen, you, I, those who have been banned from LinkedIn, that it's not the case. And precisely because there is a monetary component that is attached to it. And so the LinkedIn is going to be paid. You know, if you do a paid campaign through the LinkedIn, you know, that you will be charged for each visit, let's say. So let's say that the campaign is structured in such a way that each visit that comes to you, that's, you know, a 3 cents that will be charged to your account. So they actually are incentivized to keep the number of users as big as possible, and they don't even care who those users are. And so that's, even though they have a system that they can truly verify, a much better, at least, system to verify if the account is a bot or not. But they also have this financial incentive that is going to say, hey, keep as many accounts as possible, you know. And so that's the problem. That's the problem at its face.
Yeah, that's the perverse incentive between credibility on one hand, because you need a good brand, and you need to sell stuff, and sheer numbers on the other hand, and you can't have both. And the danger that we have today, or since last year really, is that the credibility is only lost to a select few, because it's only the people who care, who are targeted by the bots, who are dropping off the network, that you lose credibility with, not with the masses. Because let's be honest, if this stuff started, caused LinkedIn to lose credibility with the masses, the same way Twitter's reputation went down the cat litter basket, they would be doing a whole lot more about it. But in like 2020 or 2020, 2021, the biggest source of bot problems on LinkedIn was people trying to sell you crypto. That was it. And with all due respect, those might have been the very same bot accounts, just running shop from Russia, from China, from various developing nations where it's cheap. And back then, I was posting and writing about all kinds of data ethics issues, about the farmer protests in India, about Julian Assange, about WikiLeaks stuff, over and over. I've been doing that for years. Never, ever was I reported or banned until I started writing about Ukraine. And that is the scary part to me. That is my data set going like, hey, this is weird. Because suddenly my posts are disappearing because one post gets mass reported for this is bullying, this is harassment, this is racism, this is fake news. usually completely unfounded and not even related to the post at hand. But, and there we get the mechanism, if 10 to 20 accounts, bot or not, report your post all for the same stuff, the algorithm automatically blocks and removes the post. Because if 20 people say it's harassment, then it's probably harassment. But if you do that to 3 or 4 different posts of the same person in one day, their account gets auto-locked and banned. Right. Because this person is posting too much bad shit, bro. And that's how last summer I lost my account for a few days. Couldn't log in anymore. And I had no clue what happened because, most likely theory, a bot network started mass reporting my posts.
Yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes can report posts that are several months old or several weeks old, and then all of a sudden it gets flagged up, you know?
That from half a year ago.
Yeah. That happened to me too.
The popular ones. If they're not popular, they don't care.
The popular ones, that really was the case for me. You know, it's the viral post that literally exploded. And the scary part was that those were actually sort of a good post, right? I don't even have to say, you know, I can say something encouraging, like, you know, saying like the Ukrainian offensive, you know, has retaken Kherson or something like this. And like, there's nothing, really nothing. And then just people, you know, if the bots, enough of them gonna get on it and say, well, this is one of the three, or maybe even another reason to cite. And then basically that's it. The post gets blocked and you get banned. Mm-hmm. And it's, so here's, you know, for you guys, the dilemma, you know, how do we deal with this? What are the ways to fight this? Can we, you know, increase our chances in this battle? Because you have a brotherhood of those who have been banned, you know, but that's not a solution, right? You know, just getting together ex post after, you know, we all suffered the same fate. A way, you know, I still don't know a solution. That's why I'm posting this question to you and to the audience who are listening to us, you know, how do we do this?
To our audience, we wanted to invite more people, but they got banned, just so you know.
Yeah, I tell you how I deal with fake accounts. So I run a social network for lawyers for about 4 years or something like that, and I don't even trust LinkedIn profiles for that. I used to use LinkedIn profiles to verify that someone was a lawyer because I'd look at how much effort it would take to duplicate all that, you know, stuff there. But now I just don't even bother because it's arbitrary in a sense. So I basically, if people want to verify as a lawyer, I say to them, show me your bar search page. It looks like a government page. And I go there, I find the email, message that email, because that is kind of harder to fake than a LinkedIn profile to have an email on some of the government, because the government's verified that person. So if the government can't verify them, then there's no hope. So that's how I do it.
Well, I mean, I do have trust.
There is a top-down and a bottom-up approach to this. Like, mm-hmm. as I mentioned, the bot issue is not new, just the current iteration of it and it being weaponized to silence voices of people stuck in an active war and invasion. And I agree with your observations. The two posts that gets reported, mass banned, are either very popular posts, so massive trending. If my post isn't written well or doesn't trend, they don't target it. Or if it's highly critical of the Russian government and revealing war crimes and such. Now, the top-down approach to this we already discussed, which is more legislation, more control from the social network itself. We already saw a lot of legislation being enacted like that on the American side, like Zuckerberg being called into Washington, having to testify about stuff, and then being tasked with making Metaverse and Facebook a safer space, which I respectfully call bullshit on, because that's like tasking the burglar with fixing the issue, because the social media network itself, when tasked to get rid of all the bot networks for all the financial incentives we just discussed, they'll do a very bad job at it. So there's the problem with the top-down approach within the company itself. Now, on a higher level, what we're already seeing happening in Europe, hopefully, is legislation at national or international levels, like GDPR, like the new AI legislation that Europe is introducing, a lot of which is about algorithmic bias. And hell, we're talking about social media feed algorithms here. This is all part of that same AI act, where they're basically filtering posts and banning and censoring posts without transparency about the mechanisms. We don't know why we're banned. We are speculating here that it's the bot networks. We're pointing at the bots. But really, we don't know. And the social media networks are not legally obliged to tell us why the heck they took us offline, which is okay when I'm just posting cat pictures, but is a huge risk to my career when I lose access to my professional contacts, when I lose my contacts as a salesman, as a recruiter, or God knows what. So because the field is finally maturing and the issues and consequences are getting a lot bigger, we will need more top-down legislation forcing these companies to be transparent about their decision-making. That is the core thing top-down, transparency about decision-making, because as long as they are not transparent about it, they can do whatever, and the bots abuse that. Non-democratic forces out there in the world abuse this lack of transparency in democratic nations, both in social media networks, as well as in politics, as well as in voting systems, as well as in news feeds as a whole, to cause dissent, cause fear, cause confusion, and to silence the voices that need to be heard.
Yeah.
Now, top down, we just need to ridicule them. And that's where NAFO comes in. Because the core thing, as Frankfurt Schule wrote in the 60s, the core thing with propaganda and the rotten fish tactic is to just repeat nonsense over and over until people start to believe it. Why does half of Europe think there are Nazis in Ukraine? Okay, they might have gotten 1% of the political vote, but my country of the Netherlands has far right parties that get a lot more votes every year, and the same goes for France. The same goes for pretty much every country except Germany. So that's a non-issue. But because people keep yelling that over and over, repeating it over and over, the smell sticks and people start to associate it. So the most dangerous thing we can do, and that is a thing that journalists and news agencies are doing every day, is to repeat the horse shit that the Kremlin produces. Because the moment we repeat it, we are spreading it. And their sole goal is to spread it and have it be mentioned over and over, so people get confused by it. And that's why I like the NAFO movement, NAFO, that spread on Twitter and beyond these days, which is just a bunch of internet trolls in their free times ridiculing this type of messaging. It's like Anonymous Reborn. Man, I miss those days. Okay, thank you. Like and subscribe.
Yes, please do.
Yeah.
You just can't trust LinkedIn right now. They can ban you for any reason at any time. No, it's just
Now the NAFO is such laws to prevent it. Yeah, sorry for interrupting, but the NAFO is such a cool community. I've got to admire it, and one of my favorite Twitter accounts. Oh, that's awesome! One of my favorite Twitter accounts is actually called the Darth Putin. I don't know if you guys follow it. Anybody follow Darth Putin? It's hilarious. Right, that's exactly. You make it an account that just to repeat what they say, but it's such a sarcastic way that just makes everybody who read it like, that's just stupid. You know, exactly. That's the whole
point. You need to mock them.
Right.
Humor is our greatest weapon. Day 300 of my 3-day war, I lost my navy to a country without a navy. That's how we do it.
You know, or like, you know, what was it, like 250 days of war, you know, my greatest accomplishment has been that we have captured Raccoon from Kherson or something like that. You know, these are the things that
justice for the raccoon. We want that raccoon back.
It's just, you know, it makes us laugh. It makes us, you know, and points out the just how ridiculous some of these things are. But listen, so for me, okay, that's given. That is given. But, you know, the top-down, down-top approach. But, you know, we do have issue at hand. We have issue at hand. We have these bots that are there. They're fairly active. And, you know, here's a couple of the fears, and I'm just going to express them verbally here. If we're going to give, you know, full transparency about how the banning and how the algorithms works, it gives us an edge and it gives them an edge of their own, because now they know exactly what they need to do in order to ban you or me or, you know, to break a system. So it's always like, you know, a two-sided thing, right? That if we're going to be transparent, the bots get that transparency as well. So for me, the real battle that has to happen, at least the way that I see it, is that we need to deal with sort of authentication and, you know, getting those bots out of the, you know, of the networks. I mean, and then maybe it could be done again, maybe top, bottom, bottom, down. So the top approach would be, you know, when the leadership of the organization, you know, comes along and says, look, we know that we're going to lose 10% of our network users, but those users are very likely to be fake accounts. And unless you verify what you can do with your ID, with some other things, and then, you know, you need to put the picture, you need to make so many connections and so on and so forth. So that's going to be one way. Another way is that us, as the users, that we can come along and sort of, you know, be more proactive at reporting, you know, at doing our job, at, you know, and again, or maybe even designing the algorithms of how to fight this. But either way, it's an issue and it doesn't seem to have a simple solution.
Like, there are multiple actors at play here. I, as a sociologist, have to talk like this, even though my dad thought I'd never get a job like that. Which is, what's the old joke again? When the people point at the companies point at the government, and the government points at the people. Meaning we all tell somebody else, you have to do something about it. So I just talked about the top-down approach for corporations who don't want to change it. And we talked about the governments who will enact legislation, but it's way too late, and all it, because it's always lagging behind. And Nikos and I had some really nice long talks about ChatGPT and deepfakes before on this topic. But then there's the people as well, and there we need awareness. While on the government side, we need to enforce transparency, because from transparency, right, at least in my opinion, from transparency comes authenticity and comes responsibility. Because you can't hold any mother fluffer responsible if you don't know, if there's no transparency on what they're doing. But on the people side, where we're mainly stuck with, there's a lot of did how we call that in English? People who barely know how a computer works. In Dutch, we call them digibeten, which is digital and alphabetics, but digitally.
Digital moron.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, basically that. But digital literacy is another core issue here, in that we are very sensitive to being tricked. In Dutch, we have this great saying, well, I read it on Facebook, so it has to be true, which is the core issue here. And this is suddenly not a Ukraine problem anymore. It's a much bigger, longer problem. But these tactics, these banning tactics and the misinformation tactics are only so effective because the people are very vulnerable to it. And I am both positive and negative about this, because I'm sure the next generation will be slightly less vulnerable to this as long as they stop installing TikTok at a scale. But it's going to take a while. And time is not in our favor here. So then again, I'm looking at advocacy and at government stuff, because educating the people takes too long and the companies are not willing to change.
Yeah. And by the way,
it's a lack of resources, right?
So, yeah. And notice that with my parents.
There's not enough people to moderate.
They get so easily influenced by some of this information. And it's, they're just, again, you have not grown up in this era. They have not been thinking as deeply about these issues as we have. It's going to take time, especially for the new generation to get to that speed. But sorry, Nikos, I interrupted you. I know that it's your podcast. You are in charge, and we kind of...
This is great. I like surfing today. I'm just surfing and letting you guys do the podcast today. I'm outsourcing the podcast today, man. Anyway, just two experts together and just like print the money, you know? Keep speaking advertisements.
If I may interject here, you probably haven't played Metal Gear Solid 2 at some point in the early, I think it's the year 2000 by Hideo Kojima.
I've played it, yeah.
This is related to the matter at hand, I swear. Over there was a super AI taking over the world, of course, in the year 2000. And the super AI was producing fake news. Or we didn't even call it fake news back then. It was just propaganda. But they weren't lying to the people. What they were doing, and that's the literal quote, "We will drown them in truth." And that is exactly what is happening right now. And that guy, and then they had to censor half the game because 9/11 happened and the ending of it was in Washington, in New York, and they literally had to remove the Twin Towers from the game, which was interesting because he even predicted blowing up half of New York. But the point here is that it's the Baudrillard's hyper-reality that we're dealing with. Too many parallel voices that, from the perspective of a kid or an adult, They're all practically kids too, who doesn't know enough about the issue, doesn't know which voice to believe because they seem equally true. Now, right. The only way to fix that is education. And to quote Nicholas Winton on that, we obsess over all the stuff we shouldn't do wrong. We obsess over not doing bad stuff, but we should be obsessing over doing good. And that here is the issue, in that the whole discourse on social media is focused on what rules we should implement, to what behaviors to punish, what we shouldn't do. Whereas the focus should be on what should we do, which is, in this case, to mock the mother fluffers and be as loud as possible about the truth that we actually believe in. And that is the reason, again, why we know each other, because we are all three loud dudes online. And I propose we continue to do so, because that simple action is already a huge... Oh, wait, this is being recorded. You know, a huge this finger towards the bots.
Because I've been to Ukraine, Roman's been to Ukraine, we know people there, people have died. It's very easy to see where misinformation has arrived, and you can smell it. And frustrating for me is a lot of people that I've, I've been on friends that I have or been on a show there. I was very much united with them against the whole lockdowns and things like that. But for some reason, a lot of these guys are... They've suckered all this Putin information down. So I'm like, well, banging my head off the wall, trying to get people to see like there is no. I haven't found any Nazis in Ukraine. Why are all the Russians leaving the right part of Ukraine, east part of Ukraine, coming west? They look Russian, they speak Russian. We help them as refugees. The ethnic Russians basically, whatever that's called, but they don't speak Ukrainian. They speak Russian, but we're helping more of them than people that speak Ukrainian.
That's the division, again, that Moscow seeks. We call it Russia, but we should be talking about Moscow because it's the colonial empire of Moscow. It's not a federation.
Yeah, and it's different.
Division is what they seek and what they sow. But as anyone who's ever been in a relationship, division is easy. But coming together again and actually talking and connecting is way harder, but also way stronger. So I had a lot of friends who start tuning out about why are you ranting about this stuff, especially in the first months. Can't you just post nice data stuff that entertains me? Yes. Do you have to talk about terrible things? My dog just died. That kind of stuff. Ridiculing them is not going to get them over to my side. Getting angry at them is not going to convince anyone to figure to stand on my side. With the whole modern social justice movement messed up because they thought antagonizing people will get them over to my side. It does not. Continuing to talk, as hard as it may be, and I learned this from a person I love so very much, continuing to talk, even though it is so hard to do, is actually the most important thing. And some of my friends who at the start were totally weirded out over my obsession with Ukraine, because Marijn, you're not from there. Why do you care? There. But why do you care? By now, they sort of understand, and some are actually supporting the stuff now, fundraisers and such. Hmm. Not because I call them names, not because I ridiculed them, but because I kept talking calmly and warmly and pushing a message way stronger than any misinformation from any Moscow bot.
Yeah. What I get annoyed with is just people's laziness. When they come up with all these facts and figures about how evil Ukraine is, I'll say to them, okay, when is the last time you visited Ukraine? Come to Ukraine, meet the people. They don't want to do it. Don't want to spend the money to come here. They just want to believe their propaganda.
Yeah. It's easy. And we're lazy.
Yeah, and look, I'm guilty as charged in this. You know, I guess at one point of time, I just reached the threshold of my tolerance towards this. But yeah, I mean, there are people obviously that I think you can win them over by argumentation and talking and patience and this and that. But then there's just this, then there's trolls and bots that should be just completely ignored, blocked, whatever you want to do with them. That just doesn't, you know, ridicule, laugh, you know, post jokes, you know, in response to that. And then there is this middle ground, right? So middle ground is sort of, you know, people are very set in their ways. I mean, you're just going to be wasting your time by going back and forth. They're not bots. They're not trolls, you know, but they're also not very reasonable. You know, they, as what Nikos pointed out, they're not going to bother going to Ukraine and spending time and figuring out the truth. They're not going to bother reading alternative sources of information. And you're trying to, you know, and again, spending my precious time, especially, you know, both of us, we have a pretty large follower network. And again, I have a couple social networks, and then I have jobs to do, actually, you know, and hundreds of emails every day. So obviously, you cannot engage in those conversations. So my point is that you have to be very selective, right? You have to be very selective. Yeah, yeah. And then again, as I said, given that also my level of tolerance has really been on the edge these days, it's seldomly that I will actually engage somebody more intellectually to go the mile with them and help them to transform, just because no time and you know, the likelihood of success is so low that, you know, for me as an economist, the benefits don't outweigh the cost, and that's why I just drop or I'm gonna so that's just
definitely
my 5 cents.
We got to pick our battles on this. I fully agree, but speaking as a social scientist to an economist, I also want to add there is a short-term and a long-term element here, because many people that I can't convince in the short term, or I don't have the energy or the blood pressure or whatever for, because screw those guys, I'm going to do something more important because somebody's calling me to ship drones, and that takes precedent, of course. People hate admitting they're wrong.
Yeah,
it just doesn't work. In the short term, we can't. So as soon as there is a certain amount level of emotion in there, they're not going to admit the wrong, even though at a rational level, you already won the argument. They already know they're wrong. A lot of the time, it is A-okay to just cut off the discussion and screw it. Later on, they may come and go, oh, well, actually, you might have had a point, and I've had that a lot of the time. So I'm basically justifying your rage quit behavior, because the significant amount of them will come to see it somewhere down the line. And that is less of an absolute truth thing and more of a faith thing, because I want to maintain my faith in people. Because it's because of this stuff, the terrible stuff that's happening here, that I meet beautiful people too. People who inspire me, people who do what's best. And if we replicate that and keep spreading that, that's the only way to win.
Very good point. Very good point. By the way, I'm basically agreeing with you.
I know that's boring.
I've learned quite a few things, you know, even in the process of today's conversation. I think this has been going really well. Nikos, are we missing something? Do you want for us to go and maybe the direction that we have not gone yet?
I'm at the point, I'm not really sure where to go, because I've sort of outsourced the conversation to you guys. So you guys are just, you're like world experts in your fields. So sociology and economics. So I am just trying to go day by day and I'm just trying to keep my friends on both sides as much as possible. It's sometimes they're sent, because they obviously they're watching my podcast and they're sending me stuff that I would class as propaganda, and like I'll just tell them that, and then they might get a little bit hurt about that, and you know, it's a bit awkward. So
how about this? How about you give us one example and let's try to decipher that? You know, let's use one piece that sort of, you know, is a propaganda, and let's talk a little bit about that. Just, you know, maybe to give a listener a feel of how we can go about, you know, finding out the truth, you know, or carrying the conversation with somebody who raises a particular issue. So maybe pick one.
Well, they often sound the same. It'll be something like Zelensky is a puppet of the West, or Ukraine is a puppet of the West. That seems to go around a few times.
We had a big example of that yesterday, an account of an American lady who kept posting a message about, Ukrainian soldiers are getting drug-laced food, and that's why they keep fighting, and that's why they keep winning. So basically an excuse why the Russians are losing. Says, yeah, who is Ukraine is feeding people drugs. Who is doing that? Zelensky? And it was adorable because it was the exact same rant posted at like 20 different posts. And she posted it twice under my same post.
Yeah.
The issue is, on one hand, people start reporting it because humans actually do also report. And that is a good thing. We should keep doing that to get rid of it. But some people will read it and go like, oh, whoa, they're using drugs. Because that has also been a standard Moscow line. Like, they're evil drug users. I mean, they should see my country, for Christ's sake. But that's just one example. And now the account is apparently already deleted. But the short-term, the response time is way too slow. LinkedIn is releasing papers about we removed 4.4 million bot accounts. They said that in 2021. But they don't release any statistics about their total bot counts. So I don't know if 4 million is a lot or not. And the whole thing here is not that they've removed the post the day after or the person the day after, but that during that day, the misinformation was spread. And that person is probably, we've seen guidebooks, Moscow guidebooks have been released by this. That person is probably chugging vodka and manning 20 different accounts simultaneously.
Exactly.
So even if we ban it within the day, there is actually an access issue here in that people shouldn't be able to start posting as easily. I think I'm just literally grabbing the example from yesterday here.
Right. So that example, I think, is more of sort of a bot generated example that, you know, will probably die out pretty soon, because again, it's just not, it's going to be very difficult for it to be, you know, verified, and it's not going to come up in the conversation probably next month. But this idea of Zelensky being the puppet of the West, I think this is going to come up quite often. You know, Nazis is kind of died down a little bit. You know, there's now what? It's a Satanism. And what else? There's other things that, you know, Russia is defending, you know. But then I think Zelensky question is going to be raised quite a lot of times, right? So let's maybe talk a little bit about it. You know, so here we have a guy that, you know, becomes obviously on the populist vote, becomes a president, you know, and he, you know, let me just give you my response to this, you know, to how I would have responded to that. And that is, you know, that Zelensky, just the way that he came along, I mean, he cannot be anybody's puppet because he wants such an overwhelming, you know, support from people. He is a people's person. He's a populist, big time populist, you know, that won the election in Ukraine by huge majority, the 73%. I mean, you have to understand, we've never had such elections in Ukraine. It's always been like 50-50, you know, 52-48, and it's never. But this guy just overwhelmingly wins. So it's not the result of the West or somebody, you know, influencing. It's just the will of Ukrainian people. By the way, I did not vote for him. I'm still a Ukrainian citizen. I did not vote for him because I thought that he's not a professional, which he's not. He is a people's person. He is the, you know, his profession was a comedian. He did run a successful business, so he's also an entrepreneur. So you cannot just tell him, you know, he's a comedian. No, no, he actually, it's his business. He built this whole, you know,
network,
right? So basically, but again, he's not a professional politician. He's an economist. So a lot of things that he made in mistakes, you know, throughout his career are because he's not a professional. But, you know, he's definitely not a somebody else puppet because he just represents a typical Ukrainian. So that's the first thing that I would say. That's a very strong argument. Anybody who should be understanding that, you know, this was not a marginal person. It was a slam dunk. He really represented the feel how people of Ukraine felt. The second thing that I would also say about, you know, Zelensky being the puppet, I mean, of course, if he was a puppet, he would have probably fled Ukraine very early on in this war, because that's exactly what the West was trying to convince him. They were saying, hey, dude, most likely your country is going to be overrun. If you want to be saved, you know, come to our country. We're going to protect him. But he actually went against that advice. He stayed in Kyiv. He was very vocal. Look, give me ammo. Don't give me a ride. And that probably should, again, point out that this is okay. He's not really a puppet because this guy is putting his life in danger. His life has been, you know, at least 12 documented attempts of assassination, you know, on his life. So, again, that would be another point of evidence that, you know, this guy is not being controlled by anyone. Now, is he reaching out to the West? Absolutely. I mean, who else can he reach? You know, that's the first line of defense. You know, we Ukrainians cannot stand in this fight by ourselves. We know that very well. If it wasn't for the Western military equipment, if it wasn't for, you know, for England's help, if it wasn't for Netherlands, if it wasn't for the United States, we would not be able to fight this monster, you know. And the reason that the Russian army is, you know, disseminated today is because of the help of the West. So, of course, that's going to happen. Of course, those meetings, and he's going to be asking, he's going to be talking to the West, and it will appear as if he's working for the West, but he's working with the West for Ukraine. So those are the things that, you know, that needs to be pointed out. Now, when the discussion comes, and this is very important, when the discussion then comes at the level, this is a proxy war, which is very often, this is where it goes through, you know. And the point here that I always try to point out, that, you know, oh, the West is just using Ukraine as a puppet to achieve its objectives. I mean, look, this can end in a day if Russia just pulls out its military and it's done. The West is not going to attack Russia. Ukraine is not going to attack Russia. This is just silly, you know. Even when NATO puts its, you know, air defense systems on the Ukrainian border, again, they're not going to make the first step. They never wanted to. That it's all a source of propaganda. Just think about this. What is the ultimate, you know, desire for the West? And that is to create a protection from Russia, which they've been right so far. You know, Russia has been aggressively attacking these smaller countries, and now they actually picked the enemy. that is formidable and that they cannot swallow. And now the West is actually helping them. So my point is, you know, to bring up some strategic elements like this. So those are the line of conversations that I would go about in order to try to convince somebody that, you know, it's this is just not the case. Maybe you guys can add to this, but it's just my thoughts.
If I may respond to this with 2 points, because you raised two very important points here. One is that indeed the propaganda lines have changed significantly over the last year. At the start, it was hardcore, good old Soviet-style propaganda of we're yelling something that is fake and saying it is real. Ukraine is all Nazis, there's going to be nukes, blah, 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 and the best, their air force is already gone. They're already in Kiev. The entire country is overtaking. The first few days of the war were insane in terms of propaganda because they were just saying the country is already taken. And we moved to a way more subtle version where it's not hard misinformation, but more Goebbels style. So Goebbels from Nazi Germany, that guy knew his stuff, I'll admit. Which is the best kind of lie has a core of truth. Yes. So instead, they now spread misinformation about the level of corruption in Ukraine, about drug use stuff in Ukraine, about artillery explosions in Donetsk, some of which are true. It's the Russians blowing people up with ammunition and with artillery and then blaming Ukraine, which is more insidious. More dangerous to Western societies as a whole, because this is the stuff that has been infiltrating us for the better part of 2 decades. And this is just the Russian side. That's the most obvious one. But you ain't going to convince me that China isn't doing the same.
Right.
And that is the real danger in that, again, transparency of social media algorithms, as long as we don't have that, we don't know who's influencing our society, our elections, and our democracy.
Yeah.
Now, to your second point, which is that the whole war so far has been broadcasted online from day one, and that Ukraine and Zelensky, who is a media man, have been using that to an incredible effect, extent to cover the war. And which is why, unlike Afghanistan, which I also covered, now I get to watch war crimes in HD. That's like the biggest difference.
Right.
Which really does help the West get involved and care about it. And that, again, is why we need the internet. Otherwise, people don't care and people don't respond. And the whole Free the Leopards movement over the last weeks, I do believe, because on Instagram and on Twitter, everyone was suddenly wearing leopard prints because Scholz wouldn't release the German leopard tanks. Now he released the leopard tanks. My God, we're making memes, but we're using memes to help people. God, I love my field.
That's right.
Imagine if it was like World War II, they didn't have like cameras in HD, so you heard about this war going on. Imagine we didn't have the videos of what was happening in Ukraine, even just from the like the UK, like all we hear about, there is a war there and people are dying, but then we just can't relate to that. Like
the World War II comparison, especially with Holocaust Memorial Day being yesterday, is a very important one, because top-down leadership at that point in time knew a lot about the bad stuff that was happening. The masses only knew it so far. Right now, internet nerds like me online are using satellite imagery to count the growth of mass graves and Wagner's graveyard over the weeks. It grew 10 times in size, from 17 to 170 graves over the last 2 or 3 months. And that's just Wagner War Crimes PMC. We all get to watch this from various channels, and we mustn't look away. Because the only way, the reason our politicians are supporting Ukraine, with all due respect, it's a good thing they're supporting, but they do it because their electorate cares about it.
Of course.
And we need to make sure every damn citizen in the West cares about it.
That's right. No, this
and
is
that's
this
how
is,
I support you, Brian.
No, absolutely. This is you're spot on with these comments. I think you know that's how we can win this war. I mean, by the social media and propaganda war. is by rallying, you know, enough reasonable people that will be able to sort of, you know, and to be honest, a lot of things have already been done. The narratives have changed, right? And that's why Russia is trying to move to a different propaganda, because they lost that one. You know, people have seen too many war crimes and atrocities to pass this fact by. You know, they have to like say, and you know, obviously Russia is not winning, you know, obviously this and this. And then, and so at the end of the day, the scary part is that they're moving into these fuzzy type of propagandas when there's a lot, some truth to it, right? There's corruption in Ukraine. I mean, look, I'm Ukrainian, so I know very well how it is. And look, that's why we need a super strict accountability. I mean, Zelensky fired, you know, I don't know how many dozens of people in the government just in the past week, because there's been some things that came up along. So look, we need that. And don't get me wrong,
we should mention here that Zelensky fired people. He didn't defenestrate them.
Yeah. Yeah,
which is what the Russian side is doing. I'm going to quote another internet meme here. If two sides are fighting and they both blame the other, ask yourself which side is bombing hospitals.
That's right. That's right.
And indeed, yeah, so that information war is won.
Yeah. So we are definitely, you know, in a much better grounds than we used to be. And because I remember the first days of war, I mean, that was brutal. That was brutal. It was so much. There's so much activity from the Russian side, and they were just literally, but we really want this, because again, you can tell people that this is, you know, this is a white phone. This is, you like, no, it's black, you know, but no, look at this. Once you put it at a specific angle, you know, it's going to reflect and you see it white, but no, look, this is actually black phone. And then eventually, once you get too many data points, you finally, something clicks in your brain. Okay, I cannot ignore it anymore. You know, but what you pointed out is that we are moving into this new phase of fighting, and it's going to be sort of hopefully more intellectual, because this fuzzy truth, it needs actually explanation, right? To say that there is corruption in Ukraine, yes, there is. There's corruption in the United States. There's corruption in the Netherlands. And we're all learning how to deal with it. In the United States, we deal with it by, you know, taxing the lobbyist groups, you know, by exposing these lobbyist groups, to at least know who financed the campaign of this Democratic candidate or Republican candidate. So we know where those links are, and that's how we are fighting this. But, you know, that will involve a more higher level of discourse, more intellectual debates, discussions. I mean, at one point of time, Poland and Ukraine will need to reconcile as well, because look, Poland has been an incredible supporter of Ukraine, but there is a history between the two. I mean, there is Bandera. There is, you know, obviously other things that have happened that, you know, in the history that we need to sit down at the table of when you bring historians, when you bring people and you start intellectually discussing these things to coming up at some sort of consensus. And this is going to be a much longer battle. It will take us time, but that's why we need to rally all the intellectuals and people who actually know how to use their brains, and then eventually we will come better off as a humanity from this. And so, so we're going to have our job cut up for us.
If I may add just one thing to it, because I agree with everything you said, which is that these discussions, these conversations that will happen in the future, reconciliation between different countries, dealing with corruption, dealing with after effects of the war as a whole, I mean, from a PTSD point of view, that's going to be a lot of work. Speaking from the country of the Netherlands, because we colonized pretty much part of every continent on the world, all of this is important. All of this we will talk about, but it is not an excuse not to act now, because a lot of these arguments are used in discourse over here, at least, as yeah, but corruption, or yeah, but there's been historic battles. None of that is an argument not to help stop the fighting. And the best way to help stop the fighting is by arming Ukraine now to help get the Russians out of the country, because denying weapons to Ukraine will not stop the Russians from murdering.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I have nothing to add to that. Just say amen. Nikos, I think we're on the clock, and so I'm going to pass this back to you. But, man, this has been really, really great. Thank you so much again for your support of Ukraine and just everything you guys do.
Yeah, thank you, guys. That was an honor for coming on the show, and let's keep the conversation flowing, you know.
That's the most important point, to keep talking. Mm-hmm. Ask all my exes.
Got that from the podcast.
No need.
Oh, I love you guys.
So thanks very much to all the listeners, and please leave your comments below on what we've said here. We will read them, and if the comments are respectful, then we will probably talk about these comments in the next coming weeks and stuff like that. So that's it from us today. So thanks, guys.
Thank you all. Keep up the incredible work. Keep being awesome. And until next time.
Until the next time.
Nikos out.